the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, let's get it going on this Thursday, November 21st. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome and the Hot Stove Lounge, and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media for the rest of the week. My name is Pat Steinberg on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to Flames Talk. It's been a short hiatus. Welcome back, Wes Gilbertson, with us on Thursday and Friday of this week.
It is good to be back, my friend. I've been listening this week. Lots of good stuff.
Yeah, it's been a fun week. The Flames have given us plenty to talk about, including that 2-1 shootout win over the New York Islanders on Tuesday night. Daily Flames Roundtable with Wilsey a little bit later on this hour. We'll dive into some of the nitty-gritty for the Calgary Flames as they get set to host the New York Rangers on Thursday night. And Dustin Wolf will get his third consecutive start. First goalie this year for the Flames to start 3 in a row as Wolf's run continues. But wanted to start this hour and maybe have a little bit of fun on a game day. Thought this would be a good one. You know, looks like it's going to be the same roster, same lineup for the Flames against the Rangers and all that type of stuff. So I thought it might be fun to go really big picture and maybe not even just about what's happening on the ice for the Calgary Flames to kick off the hour, because here we are on November 21st, which means we're now less than 2 weeks away from the NHL and the NHLPA officially announcing their rosters for the first ever Four Nations face-off, kind of a precursor for the 2026 Olympic Games. And we're all looking forward to the Olympics in Italy. We're all looking forward to true best-on-best hockey again. And this is the first kind of mini best-on-best that we've had in 11 years, it would be. The 2014 Olympics would have been the last true best-on-best competition that we saw in the NHL or involving NHL players.
Yeah.
And finally,
when was the World Cup after that?
That was 2016.
Yeah, okay.
And that was kind of best on best.
Yeah, it was bestish on bestish.
Yeah, with some weird variations
to it. With some teams they made up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as this program is called Flames Talk, some Flames representation could very well be there at the Four Nations face-offs. How excited are you for it? Like, are you starting to feel a little bit more interested? It's the first ever time they're going to be doing something like this. Are you starting to get a little bit more of a buzz for it when it kicks off in February?
Yeah, you know what, buddy? I would say that I am starting to feel a little bit of a buzz. And, you know, I think that comes, for me, from getting a better sense of what it means to the players. And I wondered, you know, I wondered, it's not an Olympics. You know, I wondered if this would be the sort of tournament that some of the veteran players said, yeah, you know what, I'm good. And I think we might see one or two of those guys, certainly, as the tournament gets closer. You know, some more established players that have had numerous opportunities to represent their country. But, you know, I think part of why I'm more excited is I think there's pretty good buy-in from the players. You know, I had a conversation, and you and I are going to get into the different Flames who are in the mix. But, you know, I had a conversation with Rasmus Anderson a few weeks ago, and I loved the way he put it. He said, you know, if I make the team, awesome. And if I don't, I'm going to be pissed off.
Yep.
And I thought, you know what? That is the sort of mentality that makes these tournaments so much fun. If you have the best players and they want to be there, then this is going to be a hell of a tournament. And I think something that's adding to my excitement is, you know, as I see comments from across the league, as I talk to different people, you know, I think the buzz is building among the star players too, and that's so important.
By the way, as somebody pointed on the text line, it'd be 10 years. Although it will be 11. No, hold on a second. It will be. Somebody's making fun of me for 2024.
They told me there'd be no math.
Somebody's making fun of me for 2024 and 2014, but it'll be 2025. I was right, you snarky texter. It will be 11 years.
I'm staying out of this.
Feb 2014.
Yeah, no, you know what? I got your back on
Feb 2014
one.
To yeah. Feb 2025 is 11 years.
I can't argue it.
I even just went and did the math just to make sure.
Just double
so,
check.
So I can clap back on the texter.
Siri, how many days between February of 20? Hey, I got your back.
Thanks, buddy. I'm looking forward to it. Actually, more than I thought I would when they announced this.
Yeah.
And I
were both a little pessimistic. I remember us talking that day. Yeah.
And I was like, okay. I mean, it definitely is better than an all-star game. I'm sorry. I have not watched an all-star game in more than a decade. It does nothing for me. It does not, like, you learn nothing from an all-star game. You just don't. It's cool that players go, and it's neat that you get that honor, so on and so forth, but you learn nothing from an all-star game. Whereas at least this, and I think the NHL is being really smart about this as well, that they are looking at this event and timing it exactly or basically exactly a year from the Olympics in Milan, I think that's a really smart move by the NHL because I think it gives you a little bit more kind of automatic buy-in from a lot of the players. And you get guys who are like, well, hold on a second. The actual ability to play in this might help my cause. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think Connor McDavid or Nathan MacKinnon need to worry about that. But there's a lot of guys that, you know, say a Mark Scheifele. There's a name right off the top of my head. Mark Scheifele goes and plays at the Four Nations and has a good performance for Team Canada. I think that puts him in much better stead for making the Olympics come 2026.
Sure.
So I think that makes this a whole lot more interesting for me on the outside. I think it makes it a whole lot easier to get invested in if you're a player potentially in the mix. And that's why I'm actually a whole lot more excited for this and interested about this than maybe I thought I was going to be when they announced this.
Well, and it's just a great preview of the Olympics too, isn't it? You know, we're going to be talking about, wow, you know, Team Canada needs to shore up position A or position G because this is what happened at the Four Nations face-off. You know, Team Sweden isn't going to like what happened in this scenario, so maybe they take this player to the Olympics instead. Like, what, we're going to have all these conversations through the lens of what it means to the Olympics, and I do agree with you that gives it some added importance. Like, it's not, even if you go back to World Cups, you still have guys who are mostly on a mission to not get injured before training camp, right? And whereas this, and don't get me wrong, the players are certainly not going to want to be injured, but this is going to have, I hope and I think, the feel of a mid-season tournament that means something.
Yeah.
And when it was first announced, I wasn't really convinced that that would be the case.
Fair to say, as we transition it to the Flames part of the conversation, fair to say three players in the mix to represent their countries. If there were more countries involved, there's just the four. If there were more countries involved, I think that we would be talking about more opportunities for other guys, and we don't know what's going to happen on the Russian and Belarusian side of things, and we'll see if they'll be able to play in the Olympics come 2026. I have no idea what the IIHF is going to decide when it comes to the geopolitical situation in the world, so I don't know about that, but, you know, Sharon Govich would be representing his country for sure, and chance that a guy like Kuzmenko would be representing his country, so on and so forth. But for this, there's just the four countries: Canada, United States, Sweden, and Finland. And what, one for Team Canada and two for the Swedes that you would say are in consideration? Mackenzie Weegar, Michael Backlund, Rasmus Andersson. Would those be the three? Am I missing anybody in that regard that's kind of truly in the mix from kind of the way you've broken it down?
No, I think you nailed the three. I think Nazem Kadri had to have a really good start to the season to be in consideration for Team Canada, and his numbers to date haven't warranted being in that discussion for a best on best. And so I think you got the three, at least from my vantage point. Those are the three I'm watching.
Well, let's start with Weegar. Let's start with Team Canada and Mackenzie Weegar, who a little less than two years ago, went and represented Canada at the World Championship. First time he'd ever represented Canada as a player. And he's clearly in the mix. He's clearly in the mix to be one of Canada's seven defensemen. But what I don't know is how much of an actual chance he's got to be on the team, because it depends who you're asking. It depends on which projection you're reading. Some have him just off. Some have him in that number seven seed. So here's kind of the here's kind of the lay of the land. We already know Cale Makar is on. He was one of the initial guys they named at the draft. Also, sounds like Devon Taves, Shea Theodore, Evan Bouchard are all being looked at as locks for Team Canada. Is that fair from what you've read?
Yeah, I wonder about this pause
makes me think that maybe not.
I wonder how much of a lock Evan Bouchard is, and I do think
I only say that because he's ultimately on every
be
projection.
There. Yeah, I do think he'll ultimately be there, but I do think Cale Makar is also slotted into all the positions that you think, well, we have to have Evan Bouchard there because of X. We have to have him there because of his power play ability. You know, we have to have the shot. I think we know who's running Team Canada's power play, and so I ultimately would have Evan Bouchard on my Team Canada, but I lock might be a little strong for
okay.
me. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's another spot up for grabs that Mackenzie Weegar could be in the conversation for.
And this is if I can just sort of, you know, back up a second.
Yeah.
I think part of the challenge of this tournament is when you're announcing the rosters, when you're finalizing, like, we're going to know who is going to the Four Nations face-off on December 4th. And the challenge there is that how much do you take sort of current form? How much do you take what you saw in last year's playoffs because you're trying to project players 2 months out? Like, I understand why the rosters have to be set. Guys who aren't going to the Four Nations face-off understandably want to make plans for that stretch, right? Guys who are going to be there want to make plans to get their families there and that sort of thing. And so are you basing an Evan Bouchard or as we get into it, a Mackenzie Weegar on, you know, what you saw out of them last season? You know, are you taking that terrific playoff run from Bouchard and maybe throwing out the fact that he's had some pretty rough moments so far this season? Like, I think this is part of the challenge in building a team is how much do you take what you saw last week versus maybe some other prime time moments? And certainly those bolster Evan Bouchard's case because
for sure.
And the biggest moments, we've seen him play some really good hockey.
Again, he was playing like 27 minutes a night en route to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. And I know there's a lot of like, hey, you know, he's propped up by Matthias Ekholm.
Not playing for Team Canada, by the way.
Matthias Ekholm?
Yeah.
He's not?
No.
I thought I just left him.
I think
off.
You can scratch him.
Maybe. Where's he playing?
We'll get to that, Pat. We'll get to that.
Yes.
Hey, stick to the script.
He's obviously going to play on the Swedes. So, and I mean, Bouchard probably was helped out by Ekholm a lot. But also, you don't play 27 minutes a night if you can't play the position at the NHL level. Anyway, I digress. So, also in the mix, Dobson,
yeah,
Morrissey, mm-hmm, Petrangelo, Owen Power in Buffalo. Like, am I missing any other names there that would be in that mix for Canada and thus who Mackenzie would be in the mix with to maybe be on that team?
Well, I don't think Team Canada is ruling out Drew Doughty yet.
That's fair.
And so I do think he's in the mix. And, you know, Elliot Friedman, it seems like, mentions Drew Doughty a lot in his conversation. Like, when you hear Elliot, you know, breaking it down, he seems to mention Drew Doughty quite often. And as connected as Elliot is, that makes me think Team Canada is certainly going to still give him a lot of consideration. So he'd be one. I think Aaron Ekblad's probably now on the fringes of the conversation, and the other one would probably be Dougie Hamilton.
Forgot about Dougie.
You sometimes see Morgan Riley's name on the list, but I'd put him on the fringes as well.
Would Weegar be on your team? I actually, this is a show called Flames Talk, so maybe this won't surprise you, but I'd have him on my team.
Yeah.
I just his versatility and his ability to play up and down lineups. I think that him as a number seven, he'd be just fine. I think on a third pairing, he'd be just fine. In a penalty-killing role, he'd be just fine. Like, I think there's a lot of versatility in McKenzie's game. And so, for me, I would have him on the team. And I've seen him. I know Matt Larkin at Daily Faceoff had him on his over Morrissey. The interesting thing is, and I thought Larkin made a really good point, you know, on the Morrissey front, and I love Josh Morrissey. He's a Calgary kid. He's turned into one of the best defensemen in the NHL. But what might hurt a guy like that is that there are, if you're going to take Bouchard, or maybe this is what hurts Bouchard, if you're going to take Makar, and then you've got Morrissey, and you've got Bouchard, well, then you've got guys who kind of are there and are elite on the offensive side of things. How many of those guys do you need? Whereas guys like Petrangelo or guys like Theodore or even a guy like Uyghur, where there's a little bit more versatility to their game,
sure.
do they get a little bit more of a look because you don't want to bring too many of kind of the similar type player?
Yeah, and if Mackenzie Uyghur is ultimately on Team Canada, his versatility is going to be the biggest reason for it. You know, I told you off air when we were chatting earlier today, I was sort of watching Tuesday's snoozer here at the Saddle Dome through the lens of, okay, I kind of feel, and there was some Team Canada brass in the house that night, I kind of feel like I'm watching Mackenzie Uyghur versus Noah Dobson. And it's not just a head-to-head one versus one for a spot on Team Canada, but those are two guys on the maybe quote-unquote roster bubble. And so I was watching those two through that lens, and I think if Mackenzie Uyghur is on the roster, it is because of that versatility you talk about. For starters, because we're not talking inflated rosters, I think they're only taking 23. And so if you're going to have a seventh defenseman, you probably would love a guy who could play the left or the right.
Yep.
And Mackenzie Uyghur does that as well as, I'd argue, any guy in the National Hockey League. And so that helps. You mentioned the penalty killing, I think that helps. Like behind Cale Makar and Evan Bouchard and whoever else, you don't need a guy to run the power play. You know, Morrissey is in that conversation. Noah Dobson's in that conversation. I think the other things that Mackenzie Uyghur can do well, even the fact that he plays with a little more snarl than a bunch of these guys, right?
True, yeah.
He can be a guy who, you know, is, hey, Mackenzie Uyghur's not going to lay off taking a run at a star player from another team. That's just the way Mackenzie Uyghur's built. And so I think that versatility, and the other thing that is going to factor, because it always factors with Team Canada, is that he has gone and represented the national team on the world stage.
Recently.
And not only went and represented, but played his ass off.
Best player in the tournament.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Best player on the team. Best defenseman in the tournament, however you want to characterize it. He was a huge part of winning gold. I think if you talk to people around that team, he was a huge part of them sort of building an identity as a team that didn't start off very well. Certainly did not look like they were going to be a hot shot addition of Team Canada. And so I think that counts for something. He would be on my team, but if you gave me a $100 bill and asked me to bet one way or the other, I'd be really torn. I do think this is a tough, I know it's a tough team to crack, and I'm really struggling with whether I ultimately have him in or out.
I don't know whether he'll be in or out when they make their team.
Yeah.
Here's the seven I'd take.
Okay.
Makar is already on. I think Shea Theodore is one of the most underappreciated defensemen in the NHL. He's a lock for me. Devon Taves is a lock for me. Alex Petrangelo is a lock for me.
And let me just jump in. Those are two NHL pairings.
Petrangelo and Theodore,
yeah.
Taves and Makar.
Right.
And I think there'll be pairings for Team Canada as well.
Yeah.
So then I've also got Bouchard.
Okay.
I've got Morrissey, and I've got Uyghur. Those are my seven.
Okay. I thought you were going to leave off Morrissey, and I was going to tell you you're crazy.
No, I don't think you can leave Morrissey off because I don't think he's a one-trick pony. I really don't. He plays number one pairing minutes in Winnipeg. He plays a ton of minutes. He's on the best team in the NHL right now. I don't think Morrissey's a one-trick pony at all, and I think it would be lunacy to keep him off this team. I really do.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's between Uyghur and Morrissey in my eyes. I think it's more between Uyghur and Dobson or Uyghur and Power.
Or Uyghur and Drew Doughty.
And I keep forgetting about Doughty. And I guess I'm not considering him right now because I don't know what his ankle injury situation is like, but I know this. Two of the guys that we're talking about are going to get left off because if Doughty can play, they'll put him on. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Just based on how Team Canada or Hockey Canada goes about their business, I think Doughty's in if he's healthy and if he's okay with playing.
Yeah, and I think you're probably right about that. And so then you look at it, and let's say Josh Morrissey and Drew Doughty is your third pairing. You know, does that make Mackenzie Uyghur your ideal seven because he can slot in a bunch of different places if you need him? Does that make Evan Bouchard your seven because you're going to send him out to rip slappers on the power play even if you don't play him a ton of... I don't...
You mean Bouch bombs?
The Bouch bomb.
I know how much people in this market hate that term, and I'm right there with you. So I just wanted to see what reaction was going
to be. I tried
to
start the Bouch back check. It's a new thing after that impressive showing a little while. Was that against Toronto? No. What game was that?
The Montreal?
I don't remember. Anyway, I would love to see Mackenzie Uyghur there. I think he is a guy who would absolutely wear his heart on his sleeve. I think he's a guy who should be in the mix for Olympic consideration. I'm really curious which way Team Canada goes. Like, Drew Doughty's a guy, who is going to be 35 at the next Olympics.
Yeah.
You don't need to see him before to figure out what kind of player he is. B, you wonder what kind of player he's still going to be at the next Olympics. So do you take a kid like Noah Dobson, who I think has a really bright future ahead? Are you just focused on winning? You know, is it all about winning the Four Nations faceoff? I honestly don't even know what the answer to that one is. Obviously, you're trying to win, but as you get down to, okay, let's throw a bunch of these names in a hat. As you get down to Doughty, Dobson, Bouchard, Uyghur, what's most important?
And the one other thing that might help Mackenzie is how proficient he is on both sides.
Sure.
All of a sudden, I think
that's the biggest thing going for him.
I'm just thinking about it right now, and I know that I hadn't even thought about that as much as I am right now. Like, what if Cale Makar is like, I'm not super hurt, but I got to pull out because still Stanley Cup's more important. So I'm not going to play any more games. Don't want to aggravate anything, and I'll be ready for the Avalanche once the break's done. Well, now Uyghur can play either side, right? And so, or whoever may decide that. I think having Mackenzie Uyghur as your seven and him being just as good on the left or almost as good on the left as he is on the right, I think that's a really big boost to his case as well. And just one more time, Cam, what do we call it when Evan Bouchard takes a slap shot?
If I hear the term Bouch bomb one more time, I'm going to quit writing about hockey and start a pickleball blog.
Wes?
You know, I don't even remember saying that, but I stand by it.
I already said it, though, so that means you're out. Where's Vickers? We got to get Vickers back here.
Do I have to start the pickleball blog today? Because I'm a little...
You better get it going.
Yeah, okay.
This is our text line at 960-960. Honestly, we may have to hold over the Backlund and Anderson talk until Friday because text line
is
red hot as well. This says Team Canada is going to need D-men who are fully capable of playing in their own zone, not a guy who gets straight legs when he crosses his blue line. That's from Matt and Cochran. I wonder who he's talking about. This says don't forget about Dougie Hamilton. Wedley says Uyghur was solid at Worlds. This from Mike in Panorama Hills, not Panorama in BC. What about Tanev? I don't like. I love Chris Tanev.
Yeah.
And honestly, if we were going to be talking about this is an NHL ice tournament. I mean, I don't think that he'll make it on the right side. Just knowing the type of right side defense Canada has. But, I mean, if Chris Tanev were to ever represent Canada at Olympics at an Olympic Games, I think that I don't know how you could argue it because of how good he is at one specific part of the game. He is elite at defending.
Everything I know about Chris Tanev and what is at the top of his priority list, and by that I mean winning a Stanley Cup, I actually don't think he'd want to be considered. I think the
That's
style he plays and the pucks you'd be eating from the best players in the world for 2 weeks in February when you could be letting your body heal, I actually think if Team Canada reached out, he might say, hey,
thanks, but no
if
thanks.
It was an Olympics, sure, but I don't think so, guys.
This is from Flash. You can't trust Bouchard to not check out on any given play like he has multiple times in Edmonton this season. If I had to say, it would be heck no.
So this is what I was talking about, though. Like, you look at his performance in the playoffs last year, and I think this is one of the challenges for the Team Canada brass. Evan Bouchard was as good as any defenseman in the Stanley Cup playoffs last year. And so, yeah, he has checked out on some plays this fall for the Edmonton Oilers. I'm really curious. I'd love to be a fly on the wall and hear those discussions. Are you worried about a garbage back check in late October when you just watched that to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals? I don't know. I think if it was pay-per-view and I could watch Team Canada's brass debate one player, I think it would be Evan Bouchard, because I'd love to hear the sort of different directions that conversation would go.
This reads, Colton Pareko's a guy I have on the bubble too. Yep. I go no Bouchard. This says, Bouchard has shown enough bad defensive lapses this season that he shouldn't be put ahead of a guy like Dougie Hamilton. This says,
he's got the Bouch bomb, though. Did anyone mention that?
That may have been mentioned, yes. Who do you take off PP1 or 2 for Bouchard? As you said, one-trick pony. Well, if he goes, he'd probably be on their second power play unit. You'd have Kale running the first and probably Bouchard running the second with that group.
Put it this way. If Team Canada's brass is looking at it that way, well, who would we take off the power play to put Bouchard on? Then Bouchard's not on the team.
Francesca says, Bouchbaum is one of my triggers. Let's get him out of the conversation, please. Enough. This says, for your pickleball vlog, did you see the video of the guy booting the other guy in the face after a pickleball loss?
Did you see this?
I did not.
Oh, my God. It's
now I know
so
what I'm
good.
Doing in a
I don't know who that text is from, but yes, absolutely, I saw it. And it was a pickleball highlight if there ever was one.
This says Drew Doughty's too old. This says Owen Power is 6'6 and skates like the wind. I do wonder about Canada thinking about Power only because of the Olympics.
Yeah.
Because Owen Power is trending towards being an elite defenseman. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I wonder if they look at it and say, well, this is the Four Nations face-off. We want to win, but we're also trying people out to see how they play in high-leverage international games for when it matters the most in 2026. And so I do wonder. I guess what I'd say is I won't be surprised if Power's on over another maybe established name. That wouldn't surprise me just based on how sometimes Hockey Canada goes about their business.
I mean, he's absolutely in the conversation. You know, as we talk our way through this, And I keep circling back to Drew Doughty, but you know that he's a substantial part of the blue line puzzle. Do they announce Drew Doughty on December 4th, knowing, hey, he'll tell us if he can't do it? Like, it's easier to replace him than it is to say,
hey, you're off.
Oh, man, okay, Doughty's back playing 27 a night and looking pretty good doing it.
Yeah, that's very fair.
I understand why, but I wish the rosters weren't being chosen so early, because I'd love for this to be a storyline to follow in the lead up, very much like it is, you know, part of the fun in Canada in the lead up to the Olympics is, oh, okay, who just moved ahead of who, and what about this line? And unfortunately, we'll be robbed a little bit of that just because of how early they want the rosters finalized.
I still remember 2010, or this would have been 2009, was my first year.
How many years ago?
This would be 15 years ago. I had to do some real 15 years ago, a little bit less than 15 years ago. It was December of 09 when they were naming the rosters for 2010. And at the time, the Flames had Jay Bouwmeester, Robin Regier, and Dion Phaneuf all on the team. And I remember we're like, how many of these three? Like, are all three going for Team Canada? Like, oh, we could be talking about three Flames blue line, and not one of them ended up making it. And I remember how much of a surprise that was.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was a really poor start to the season that year for the Flames. So, also played in. Or no, it wasn't a poor start, but they were in the poor. Like, they had started to regress a little bit after a really good start. And none of those guys ended up making it.
Did not stop Nicholas Hagman.
No. Nicholas Hagman, he was there for the Finns. That is very true. It's Pat and Wes, and yeah, I didn't think the Uyghur conversation would spur the text line ripping on Evan Bouchard quite so much, but it did. And we'll hold over till Friday the Rasmus Anderson, Michael Backlund conversation.
I love it.
Why not? It's Pat and Wes along with you this hour on Flames Talk. We're here at the Hot Stove Lounge at the Dome. Cam and Shan, our producers, are back at our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And time now for a Thursday edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, and now Derek Wills here in the Hot Stove Lounge as well, the voice of the Flames, to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Boys, we had a really fun conversation on post-game Flames Talk post-game Tuesday following Dustin Wolf's 28-save performance against the Islanders, and said, oh, he's rolling right now. What do you do for Thursday against the Rangers? And, you know, it was a really good conversation. I think you could have made really good arguments to giving Dan Vladar the start Thursday against the Rangers. They're going to go with Wolf, though. It's the first time a Flames goalie will have started three consecutive games this season, and also is his sixth start in eight games. Guys, what do we make of Dustin Wolf getting the start against the Rangers and not going to Vladar? It's now going to be, it hasn't been since last Tuesday that Dan Vladar played his last game.
Well, post-game on Tuesday, I said if I was Ryan Huska, I would go right back to Dustin Wolf. He's feeling it, he's in the zone, and he's winning games. And ultimately, isn't that what's most important here? I do think you have to manage your players, but first and foremost, the Flames are trying to win hockey games. And this isn't a knock on Dan Vladar. I'm just spewing facts here. He has lost three straight and six of seven since he started the season with two straight wins. On the flip side, Dustin Wolf has three-game winning and five-game point streaks and is clearly playing the best hockey of his life. I mean, he faced 29 shots, strange stat, but he's faced 29 shots in each of the last three games that he's played in, and he stopped 85 of those 87 shots, all wins. 7-2-1, 236, 925 on the season, and even better at home. There's only been one goalie in the NHL, Andre Vasilevsky, who you could argue has been the best goalie in the league for the last half decade, who's been better on home ice than Dustin Wolf has been. 6-1-0 with a shutout, a 1.83 goals against average, and a .944 save percentage in seven games at Scotiabank Saddledome this season. And as I tweeted out earlier, he has been one of the three stars in six of seven games inside the Dome this season.
Yeah, but you can't trust that.
I'm not sure who picks it.
Who picks the three stars at the Dome?
I don't know if you've seen the guy, but he has very thick glasses.
Hey.
He's wearing a purple tie.
They're not solemn, bulgy thick. Have you seen those things?
Does his name rhyme with Sat Pineberg?
I got the thin lenses.
You're not fooling anybody, buddy.
You see.
Guys, I'm sure Dan Vladar is probably a little anxious, probably wants to get back into the net as soon as possible. I'm sure we're going to see him on Saturday for the finale of this homestand. But right now, Dustin Wolf has earned an opportunity to stay in the net. He, in my mind, is the front runner for the Calder Trophy. And I know Frank Saravalli said the same thing on Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto today. I would leave him in there for one more game. And if he does what he's already done once this season tonight, and I don't want to say that seven-letter word that starts with an S and ends with a T, then maybe you consider putting him back in there on Saturday. If not, then I'd probably give Dan Vladar that game.
I'm glad you've mentioned Dan Vladar a few times, because I want to look at this from that angle, and I'm agreeing with you. I think this is the right call for the Calgary Flames. I think we, in a sort of alternate universe, guys, I think we'd be sitting here defending this decision if it was Dan Vladar with the same stats about to make a third straight start. And I don't think the fan base would be reacting the same way. I get it. Everyone wants to see Dustin Wolf, and they want to see more of Dustin Wolf. And what a great story he's been so far. Like, this was going to be a slam dunk. When Pat tweeted out the starting goalie this morning, when you tweeted out the picture, Wilsey, it was going to be – people were going to be thrilled to hear it. I think if Dan Vladar had allowed one goal in his past two starts, had been the pillar of back-to-back victories the way Dustin Wolf has, I think we'd be sitting here saying, hey, I know you guys don't want to leave Dustin Wolf waiting too long, but Dan Vladar has earned the right to stay in the crease. And so I think it's important that we sort of look at it and say, if this is the precedent, I love it. You know, if that's the hot hand, go with it. And Dustin Wolf, with what he's done lately, you know, I love the wording of him saying, yeah, I'm in the zone right now, because to me, it's not a guy saying, I've got this all figured out, I'm never going to have a bad game in the NHL again. It was him saying, yeah, guys, I'm in one of those grooves that goalies work so hard to get in. And for that reason, I think he deserves to be starting. And I will add really quickly, because Dan Vladar has had some tough assignments this year, I love giving Dustin Wolf one of the best teams in the league. I think this is a great measuring stick for Dustin Wolf as he continues to prove himself and to show what he's capable of in this league.
Yeah, like, make no mistake, I think it's important to keep this a tandem and to keep getting Dan Vladar plenty of starts and plenty of work. But you can do that while also riding Dustin Wolf a little bit here. And I think there's a few things that really intrigue me about this. And the Flames have done a nice job of, especially early on, not handing, but kind of finding some softer landing spots for Wolf. And I think that's perfectly fair. That's he's the rookie. He's
smart.
The guy. He's exactly. It's yeah. He's the guy that you're trying to build confidence in and give him some softer landing spots as he gets acclimated to the league full time. And so they've done that. And this is, you know, probably his toughest opponent yet that he's faced. Now, he's doing it on home ice, not on the road. But I think this is a really, really strong measuring stick for him, which I think is a very cool opportunity. So I love that. And you're doing it when he's in the best groove of his NHL career. He's playing bonkers lights out hockey right now. So I really do think this is the right play. And you can also message it to Dan and saying, look, we were going to give both of you one of the next two games. We're going to go Dustin against the Rangers, and then we're going to go to you against Minnesota on Saturday. And that's all that we've planned for now. And that kind of satisfies the tandem and the competition side of things as well. So right now, Dustin is the marginally better of the two goalies. And I think part of that is because of some of the softer landing spots, and Dan's workload, I think, has been more difficult in terms of the opposition, and he's done a good job with that. But at the same time, you take a look at the numbers, you take a look at the underlyings, all that type of stuff. Yeah, it's pretty fair to say that Dustin's been the better of the two guys. Mm-hmm. So I think he's earned this. And I think when it's all said and done, Wilsey, I think you would have been kind of outthinking yourself if you didn't go to Dustin in this game against the Rangers. And I think that that's the right call when it's all said and done.
I agree, but I also think it might be the toughest test of Dustin Wolf's career.
For sure.
Yes, the Flames are at home, but they're at home against a Rangers team that has been better than any team in the NHL on the road this season.
Yeah.
They're 7-1-0 outside of Madison Square Garden.
Other goalie's pretty good too, isn't he, guys?
Yeah, absolutely. And just think about how good Semyon Varlamov was for the Islanders a couple of nights ago. And Igor Shesterkin has been, and I talked about Andrei Vasilevskiy earlier, you could make a case that Shesterkin's been the best goaltender in this league over the last 5 years or so. So this is going to be a tough test for Dustin Wolf and for the Flames. You'll probably need a little bit more goal support tonight than the team has been giving either one of their two goaltenders to this point in the season. But Ryan Huska, you know, he said they had a schedule kind of penciled in to start the year, and they wanted to rotate back and forth between the two. But he also said that at some point in time, he would love it if one of the two guys grabbed, if not the number one job, then at least the number 1A job. Dustin Wolf has done that. Now, it could swing back to Dan Vladar at some point in time, but hey, 19 games into the season, both guys have been good. I just think Wolf's been a little bit better. But having said that, and Pat, you pointed it out during this conversation, and we talked about a post game on Tuesday, Dan Vladar has also had the tougher games this season. Yep. You know, he's played way more on the road. He's had both of the back-to-backs. So it's almost hard to compare apples to apples here. It's more like apples to oranges.
Well, and I think while this makes great fodder for us on the round table, while, you know, it's a talking point for fans for sure, you know, I imagine the conversation with Jason LaBarbera and Dan Vladar yesterday went something like this. Hey, Vladdy, we're going to start Wolf tomorrow. Well, yeah, duh. I mean, he's given up one goal in the last two. Did you think I thought I'd be starting? No. I think Dan Vladar gets what's happening here. Just like Dustin Wolf would understand if his puck-stopping partner had allowed one goal in back-to-back wins, just you got to get it. This is how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's also a competitive guy.
Sure,
he's in a contract year.
But you got to understand.
So he wants to play. Yeah. But, yeah, he probably – at least in the back of his mind, understands why they're doing this.
Here's what I'd say. Can you just, there's the cord there. Can you just like, it's kind of like knocking your mic arm down. So we just like untangle the cord right there. There we go. It's bugging me. Live radio.
This is magic. No one ever taught me how to put one of these things on properly.
The thing that I think would be a saving grace for Vladar, not saving grace, but like the way that you can message it back is, look, Dustin's playing his ass off right now, and we're going to reward him for that. The same way, if you get into a groove, we're going to do the same thing. Like, I don't think it's out of the question at all that December or January, all of a sudden, Dan Vladar's in a groove and he gets 6 of 8 or something like that. I remember the last time they kind of had a true tandem was the year, if I remember correctly, Brian Elliott and Chad Johnson. That was kind of the last time they had a true tandem, because then Mike Smith was here and he was always looked at as the one. Obviously, Jacob Markstrom was here.
Further, I don't think Chad Johnson started that many games.
He went. The only reason I bring it up
is because he had a run. Remember
exactly, and he had a run where he started something like 15 of 19, and that's why I remember it. And Brian Elliott was the guy before and after that, but there was a run there where Chad got like 15 of 19, and his numbers were bonkers during that stretch. So that's kind of the last time I can remember quite having a conversation like this. And so I think you can message that to Dan and saying, hey, if you get on a run and if you get hot, we're going to afford the same treatment to you.
And accountability has been big for this team.
Yeah.
And that goes both ways. If you're not performing, they're going to take time on ice away from you. And if you are performing, you're going to get more opportunities. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing here. Dustin Wolf has won 3 straight. He's helped the Flames pick up a point in 5 consecutive contests. He's earned an opportunity to get a third straight start. And, hey, it was Dan Vladar who was the first goaltender to get back-to-back starts this season. So it's not like they're treating one guy differently than the other, in my opinion.
And I think, guys, because you're way better at this radio thing than I am, you're saying what I've been trying to say, and that's that, yeah, you want both goalies to understand, hey, the guy who's playing the best is going to start more games.
And healthy competition.
Yeah.
Derek West, Pat, Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, you know, it kind of is in relation to the goaltending conversation, so I think it's a good kind of next step on the conversation. But, you know, Calgary's blue line has 2 full-on proven guys on it in Mackenzie Weegar and Rasmus Anderson. Both guys are having great years. And then you've got a lot of guys who are relatively inexperienced as full-time NHLers. Kevin Ball's got 1 full NHL season under his belt. Braden Pahal has none. Jake Beans had the injury issues and is still kind of trying to find his way in this league. Daniil Miramanov is a guy that is still trying to find his way. Like, it's a relatively inexperienced blue line. after Anderson and Weegar. Tyson Barrie's here, but is at a different stage in his career compared to when he was a full-time NHLer. I guess my question would be, how surprised are we at what this blue line has been able to do, knowing its relative lack of experience?
Very surprised. I mean, you subtract, arguably, the best defensive defenseman and the best penalty-killing defenseman in the NHL in Chris Tanev and a fantastic 200-foot defenseman in Noah Hanifin. And I assume the Flames were going to take a big step back on the blue line. But to Craig Conroy's credit, kind of the throw-in in a sense, not from a Flames perspective, but from a fan's perspective, in the trade with the Devils for Jacob Markstrom, Kevin Ball, who missed most of training camp in the preseason, by the way, he has fit in perfectly on the left side of the top pairing with Rasmus Anderson. And he's just getting better and better and better, and he's still a young defenseman at only 24 years of age. So that trade looks like a real win for the Flames. I'm not saying it's a loss for the Devils, but from a Flames perspective, you get Ball and a first-round pick. That's fantastic. So the first pairing's been the best pairing. There's no doubt about it. Mackenzie Weegar's been good in the second pairing. Daniil Miromanov's been a little bit up and down, but the coaches have talked about how they've wanted to give those guys, as a pairing, a little bit longer leash to build some chemistry. I think it's starting to happen. Miromanov's looked like a different player since he scored his first goal of the season. All of a sudden, he looks way less tentative. He's getting way more involved offensively, and that's who he is. On the third pairing, Brayden Bahal's been brilliant. And I remember when training camp in the preseason started, wondering if he would be in the top six for this team. I assumed he'd be at least seven, but I wasn't convinced that he'd be top six. He has been a stalwart on that third pairing, playing in every single game, and it's his partner that's rotated. So they've basically got three guys trying to play on a pairing with Brayden Bahal, and it's been more often than not one of Jake Bean or Tyson Barrie, and who knows, maybe it's Joel Hanley tonight if the Flames don't have Mackenzie Weegar available. But it's been way better than I thought that it would be. And the Flames are right now eighth in the NHL in goals against per game. And yeah, goaltending's probably been the single biggest part of that. But I think the defensemen in front of the goaltenders have performed very admirably as well.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking yesterday in the context of some of the panic or worry about the lack of offensive production of late. And I certainly understand where that concern is coming from. But, you know, I was thinking back to around this time last fall when the concern was that they couldn't stop giving up high-danger scoring chances. Mm-hmm. And that was before they traded away the defenseman that you mentioned. And toward the end of the season last year, you'd watch a sort of patched-together blue line and think, oh, I don't know if they have the right pieces here. And so, yeah, with a very under-the-radar addition, if a 6'6" behemoth can ever be described as under-the-radar, Kevin Ball has been a great fit on that top pairing, as you said, but just the, you know, the way that Daniil Miromanov has steadied his play after a tough start, the way that I feel like, you know, and I had a quick conversation with him this morning, the way I feel like Jake Bean is starting to kind of settle in and understand what this coaching staff asks of him and what this system requires of him. You know, this blue line, and it's going to continue to be a challenge, but it's been a bright spot for the Flames, and guys, I didn't see that coming.
No, I'm really pleasantly, like very pleasantly surprised, and I think the biggest culprit or the biggest kind of reason for it is Ball, because they needed one of those guys to kind of just give them a pairing, right? And it's taken a little while for Miromanov to get a little bit more closer or closer to where the Flames would like. I don't think more closer is proper grammar. It's taken Miromanov a little while longer to get closer to where the Flames want him to be. But right from the get-go, even though he missed like 2/3 of training camp, Ball and Anderson have been just a steady pairing that you know you can roll out. One of the most used pairings in the National Hockey League this year has been Anderson and Ball. So having one of those guys step up and solidify a pairing with one of the two veterans was kind of non-negotiable for this blue line to maybe be more of a sum of its parts. And so far, Ball's been huge in that. Anderson's been great. Weegar's been great. And then you've got kind of the last guy who I think is really important in it, and that's Pahal, and him being able to say, this is my role, and I'm going to be the best I can possibly be in my role. I just remember him talking to us after the first preseason game where he kind of set the tone for his entire season by laying out 8 hits or whatever it was in Seattle. And he sat with Wes and I right where you're sitting, Willsie, and he said, hey, you know what? Being a third pair right side defenseman in the NHL, there are far worse jobs than that. Yeah. And I just want to be the best third pair right D in the NHL I can be. I was like, damn, that's a really refreshing way of thinking about it. And I think that's been huge in him kind of solidifying his spot as an everyday guy. Because the rest have been interchangeable, but when you're able to nail in a couple more pillars, that helps you do what they've been able to do.
It does, and we've talked a lot about Chris Tanev and Noah Hanifin, and for good reason. But don't forget that the Flames started last season with not 2, but 4 pending UFAs on the blue line.
Yeah.
Nikita Zadorov and Oliver Shillington. And you mentioned Braden Bahal, Pat. I think he's actually an upgrade on Nikita Zadorov on the third pairing. Does he have the ceiling offensively? No. But they're both very physical defensemen. And Nikita Zadorov, he was as likely to lead to a chance for as he was to a chance against. Pahal is a defensive defenseman who I think fits better in that third pairing role where you don't want to go on a roller coaster ride each and every night. So, yeah, the top three's been really good. Miramanov's starting to come around. Pahal's been fantastic on the right side of the third pairing, and you hope that one of these guys steps up and solidifies a spot on the left side of that pairing, and then I think you're cooking with gas.
Is there any chance, guys, because we know something's bugging Mackenzie Weegar. He didn't practice yesterday. He didn't take morning skate. They're hoping, and I think Ryan Huska used the word expecting, he's going to play tonight. Any chance we see 7?
Maybe. Maybe.
I'd be surprised. They love that fourth line.
Yeah.
My guess is we see Hanley in warm-up,
yeah,
and Weegar tries it out. And if Weegar's good to go, Hanley's a healthy scratch. And then if Weegar's not good to go, they put Hanley in. That would be just because the only two guys working late after optional morning skate were Barry and Klapka. So my guess is we'll see Hanley warm up just as kind of precautionary.
Yeah.
And then we'll see if Weegar can go. But I know that injuries are very tight around here. But, you know, Coach Huska was very quick to say we expect him to play, so that would be my guess. I am still watching to see if Weegar takes warm up though.
100%, and I wonder if it's that block shot that we saw him take
early in the game.
It could be an illness. We don't know. We're discussing, but some teams like doing 11-7. The Flames aren't one of those teams. I've asked Ryan Huska about it in the past.
Yeah,
he likes to be able to roll 4 lines and 3 pairings. So I would be surprised if they went 11-7. We'll see though.
All right, boys, that'll do it for our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on the program as well. Thanks to Cam Hughes and Shan Vergie, our outstanding producers as well. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.